not so long ago that cancer was just the big C, if it was mentioned at all. Soon, according to Macmillan Cancer Support, a charity, nearly half of us will experience it at some point in our lives. The taboo may begin to fade as the chances of surviving cancer increase. In 1992, just one third of those who died had had cancer at some point in their lives. In 2010, it was 44%, and in 2020, it's expected to nudge nearly 50%. Kieran Devane from Macmillan says there'll be more cancers as the population ages, but more people will survive.
We know that every 4 years, life expectancy in the UK goes up by 1 year, and that's tremendous progress and a credit to everybody involved in the NHS in achieving that. The knock-on effect of that is this increasing cancer incidence driven almost exclusively by ageing. The good news as well for cancer patients is back in 1992, you had a 4 in 5 chance of dying of your cancer, but now that's dropped to 3 in 5, so the proportion of people surviving cancer has doubled since 1992.
Kieran Devane talking on the Today programme. What's worrying the charity is whether we're prepared for the number of cancer survivors and the support they'll need. Laura Lee is Chief Executive of MAGGIES, a national group of centres for people living with cancer. She's with me now. Welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
Were these this estimate at all surprising to you?
Not at all. MAGGIES first opened its first centre just over 18 years ago, and that was really when we were starting to see that shift of people living with cancer for longer because of the improvements in treatment, but also because we knew more people were going to be diagnosed. And that's led for the MAGGIES organisation to continue to open more centres, because this gap and increasing need has continued.
What is the need that's not being met, or that potentially might not be met if these figures are actually borne out by what we experience in just a few years' time?
Yeah, I think the need falls into sort of two categories. There's the group of people who are diagnosed with cancer who are going to go on and be cured, and they're having to live with the impact of really very tough treatment and the uncertainty of not knowing whether or not their cancer is going to come back. And that might be disfiguring surgery, that might be loss of fertility, that might be impact in terms of workforce. And then there's the group of people who cancer does come back, and they are also experiencing that more chronic situation where they're on and off treatment over a number of periods of years, and that causes an impact on their lives and their families.
Presumably the NHS is better at that bit of it. Who should be providing, in your view, the bit for those people who do have a successful remission and are dealing then with whatever health changes may result from having had cancer?
I think the whole question about how people should be followed up and be dealt with the social aspects, I think, is best done not in the acute clinical situation. That's what hospitals are there to do, and do it fantastically well. And I think it is for places like MAGGIES centres where we can offer that community social support.
But inevitably you're not everywhere, and the charitable sector
absolutely
can't provide this kind of service across the whole country. I mean, is there a way of closing that gap, Jim?
I think there's a way of educating people with cancer about what they can do to help themselves, about how they can play an active role in their follow-up, about how they can use the NHS system to best and most efficient effect. So I think there's a lot of efficiencies that we can put into the system by better educating and supporting family and friends going through cancer diagnosis.
Laura Lee, Chief Executive of MAGGIES, thanks very much. Well, James Landale, the BBC's Deputy Political Editor, was successfully treated for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and he's where you'd expect him to be in our Westminster studio. James, thanks for speaking to me this lunchtime.
Hi, Sean.
Has our attitude to cancer kept up, do you think, with the change in the chances of surviving it?
No, I don't think so. I think there's still a taboo. People still think that if you get cancer, you're automatically going to die. And that's why they use the euphemisms, the big C, the hushed voices. They romanticise cancer by using martial language. There's this absurd idea of where people talk about battling cancer, as if you have some kind of choice about it, and that, you know, there are those people who choose to battle it and those who choose not to battle it. All of that language, you know, is wrong, because, you know, cancer is a nasty, ghastly thing that happens to you, and it's the doctors who do the battling. I think the really interesting point now is that, you know, I was incredibly lucky. I had, you know, a cancer that my doctor said I had a good diagnostic prospect of dealing with, which is sort of medical speak for, you know, you've got a reasonable chance of dealing with this. And clearly that is increasingly the case with many, many other cancers too. And I think the sort of the language and the attitude hasn't followed that yet.
How did other people's attitude towards you change when they found out you had cancer?
Well, what was really interesting was that when people came up to you and they found out, you know, they would look at you and they'd say, oh, how are you? And they'd tilt their head on one side and look rather earnest and caring. And clearly, you know, half of their brain was thinking, you know, how are you? But clearly a large chunk of their brain was going, how are you coping with the process? prospect of death and the fact that, you know, this might be it for you. And, that, you know, that's a totally understandable curiosity because, you know, it's incredibly human. It's like Greek tragedy. You know that someone's going to die. The interesting thing is how it's going to happen. And I think however much you reassure people, look, you know, it's an illness and you know, the doctors are pretty positive and I've just got to go through some pretty ghastly treatment, you can go out the other side. And once people have sort of got used to that, then actually I found the attitude from people incredibly, you know, incredibly kind. I found the whole process incredibly reaffirming of the goodness of human nature, you know, just the sheer generosity of people who come out and you know, help you and your family in those kind of circumstances. But what's interesting is, would they feel the same way for somebody who had a less well-known illness or condition that potentially could be equally as threatening, but didn't have the kind of, the romanticism about it?
As I say, you were successfully treated. What about the quality of care, if you like, after the treatment, or what kind of support is available? I mean, we're hearing from Laura there about concerns about the kind of patchy nature of it, and whether actually a kind of a health service is designed to deal with something that isn't about treating somebody who has an acute condition.
Yes, I mean, I think clearly, you know, when you're having the treatment, you are the centre of attention, you are the focus, you're on a programme, you know, you go in these 2 or 3 week cycles. The moment you finish that and you've had your treatment, then you sort of fall off the edge of a cliff because, you know, you wait for the treatment to take effect, you wait for the short-term side effects to go. Then you can face months, if not years, of A, feeling incredibly knackered, simply because, you know, some of the treatments like chemotherapy and radiotherapy can, you can get your hair back, but you can be exhausted for 18 months, if not longer, as a result of some cancer treatments. And also, psychologically and emotionally, you're pretty raw after all of this, and it's quite a large leap to move from the mortal to the mundane. And I found the most useful thing was to talk to other people who'd had cancer, to learn from their experiences. If anybody's listening who's got cancer, I would certainly recommend reading a book called Love for Now by a poet called Anthony Wilson, who takes you through the extraordinary physical and emotional roller coasters, about the cliche, but it's true, that you can go through before, during, and after. And I think what's really interesting is, like with many conditions, there's a lasting, lingering impact, and it just takes a long time to get over it.
And a lingering fear of it coming back?
Yes, obviously that depends totally on your own condition and what kind of cancer you've got. There is a huge difference between people like me who were much blessed. I was told very early on, look, this is a cancer you potentially can deal with. That is totally different from those people who are told, right, you have a cancer, we're going to have to manage it. And that there means there's much greater doubt. So I would not in any way claim to be able to speak for people like that because I didn't share that experience.
James Landale, thank you very much for talking about the experience you did go through. And just a reminder of that book that James was mentioning. It's called Love for Now, and it's by Anthony Wilson.